Hello and welcome. It's our bonus Q&A episode for Books of the Year. We're in the studio here with international best-selling author David Baldacci. If you'd like to hear him talk specifically about Nash Falls and Hope Rises, that episode of the podcast came out just a few days ago. You can check back in with that. But question number one of our Q&A, David, what is the last book that you really, really enjoyed reading?
I listened to the audiobook, James, by Percival Everett, which won the Pulitzer. It's the retelling of Huckleberry Finn, and Percival Everett is just a phenomenal writer. And I've been a Mark Twain fan. I'm on the board of the Mark Twain House, and my wife and I, 10 years ago, created the Mark Twain Literary Prize that I give out every year in November. So that book really was right in my wheelhouse, and it was just a delightful read.
Can I just ask you a follow-up on audiobooks? How often do you listen, and what's the balance?
I think the balance is probably 30% audiobook and 70% hard. I don't read on an ebook. I read hardcover. That's where my nightstand is, like this high, you know, 6 feet high. And my wife does both. She reads a lot on ebooks. We travel a lot, and she doesn't want to lug a bunch of books, but she also has a bunch of real books as well.
Is there an idea in a book, a plot twist or a character or a story that you've always looked on with envy?
Yes, and he's right here in Wales. Jasper Ford's Thursday Next series, fantasy sci-fi. I swear to God, that series was absolutely fantastic. It's like she's a literary agent where she can jump into classic books because there's like skullduggery going on there. And she has to go through like the Jane Austen novels and jump into it. It's just phenomenal. The cleverness, the imagination. I was always jealous of him because I was like, I wish I had thought of that because it's amazing. He has the nursery rhyme stories too, where he does retelling of like Humpty Dumpty and the Three Bears and... I love creativity and imagination, and that guy, he just oozes from him.
I kind of think this next question is redundant because in the podcast that we did with David about his new books, he right at the end, he talks about all the other books that he's working on. Anyway, the question is, do you work well with deadlines?
Yeah, my deadlines are self-imposed ones. I mean, I'm sure my publisher, I've never missed a deadline in 30 years.
There you go.
And I take that very seriously. And I'm ahead of schedule right now, which gives me more latitude to spend more time on each book. And I don't want to lose that advantage right now. So it's full steam ahead. Yeah, I hit my marks.
And how long on each book?
It varies. I mean, like the first 620 Man, I read the Pandora Papers and the Panama Papers about all this dark money floating around the world. And they answered every question except, what do you do with $30 trillion of dark money? And so I wrote the 620 Man in 2 months. To answer that question, because I found it so fascinating. So usually a typical book would take me, you know, 6 months to write.
When you start reading a book, do you always finish it? Do you feel committed?
I don't. If it's not working for me and I have lots of other books on my stack, probably like a lot of people on their streaming platform, it doesn't catch their attention in the first 10 minutes. They move on.
What would 10 minutes equate to in a book? How long do you give it until you're like, no?
If I get to the fourth or fifth chapter and I'm not, you know, immersed in the story, then I kind of let it go. I may go back and revisit it, because sometimes it's like maybe you didn't give it enough of a chance. If other people tell me if you kept going, it was really good, then that would matter to me.
Is there a book from your childhood, David, that was clearly, maybe in retrospect, but maybe you knew it then, was very influential?
I tell this story sometimes because my family subscribed to Reader's Digest condensed books, so you get like four stories in one book, and it was a cheap way to get books. And I remember I was like, I don't know, 12, and I opened this Reader's Digest condensed book, and it had a story called The Blue Carbuncle by a guy named Conan Doyle. Never heard of him before. And I read it. It was my first Sherlock Holmes story. Wow. And I finished it going, I hope this guy's written some other stuff.
Someone should take a chance on this Conan Doyle guy. What is your writing routine? Do you have one? And if so, are there any snacks involved?
I have an office outside the house because like 22 years ago, a magazine came to my house to photograph me for something. And they were there all day and they trashed our house. And as soon as they left, my wife came over and said, get out. So 22 years ago, I got out and I got my own office. So if I'm in town in Virginia, I go there every day and I work. But I'm a planes, trains, automobile guy. You know, I wrote this morning at the hotel. I write everywhere I am. I don't need to be in a particular space. My friend John Grisham, he lives in Charlottesville and he has this writing studio outside his house there. And that's where he writes. And that's the only place he writes. So, you know, he travels somewhere. He's not writing at all. And that works obviously terrifically well for him. But I've always thought the physical place is not a perfect physical place to write. It's here. I've written some of my best stuff in a little Greek deli in the middle of Northern Virginia. I have my little, I go there so often, in the back table, they have a plaque on the wall. This is David Baldacci's remote office, you know? And it was really funny. And sometimes people recognize me and if they're at my table and I'm at another table, they like, do you want your desk back? No, you're fine. You're fine. Enjoy your chicken.
Wow. But if you're in your writing area at home, snacks involved? Because let me tell you, Walter Nash, the way he's going, he's not even allowed to look at a bag of crisps.
I know. Well, you're probably going to hate me, but I love, you know, raw nuts. So I'm an almond walnut guy. And but you know what? Trust me, I'm also Italian, so I love my pastas and all the other stuff. So I indulge. Don't think I don't indulge.
So you could be a train killer if you needed to be. Have you ever experienced writer's block?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even call it writer's block. I just call it, it's a normal part of writing. You haven't thought things through. And if I have it, I'll either like go for a bike ride or a walk, or I'll go take a shower. I have solved more plot issues in the shower. I don't know if it's the water just pouring down on me, but it's like part of my subconscious, you know, clarifies and click, all of a sudden there's my answer. And the other benefit is I'm incredibly clean most of the time.
We talked about this. Chris Chibnall has written a book, and one of the coppers in there goes for a shower, works out some things. And I realized I had done the same. And my theory is that it's the thunderous noise of the shower on your head. No one is in there. Well, not normally. They might be in your book. There's no music. There's nothing else. It is just sort of the white noise and you.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what it is.
I think it's a perfect place, the perfect place for contemplation. It really is.
If we were come to your house, David, how would we find the bookshelves? Is there any order to them? Alphabetical, geographical, color, any?
We have a lake house where there's a whole wall of books, and it's tall enough that it has a ladder. So my father-in-law, years ago, we went down and we brought books down, and we decided we're going to do it by alphabetize, you know, the last name of the author. It's not as easy as you think it might be. There's math involved, and I totally suck at math. So we got to like R, and we ran out of shelf space. So we had to move back again and reconfigure this a little bit. It took us like 2 days to do this. Who thought? Our house in Northern Virginia, it's just, it's random. You know, we don't alphabetize anything. It's just books all over the place. And as it should be, you know, Strange at the Time, there was a bookstore in there and everything was higgly-piggly. You know, there's stacks of stuff. Nothing made sense. But when you go in, you get to explore. You don't know what you're going to find around the corner.
My favorite Victorian word for a room in the house, because obviously most rooms describe what you do in them, lounge or, you know, bedroom or shower room or whatever, was a sluttery. And a sluttery was a chaotic room out of which things were created. You know, so it was chaos, but in a good way. So that's the way I approach my bookshelves.
I've lived in a sluttery for years.
And it's done pretty well for you. Do you keep your books in good condition, or are you happy to sling them about, bend the spines, chuck them out if you feel as though you can?
Yeah, I mean, if it's not like a first edition or something, yes. I'll turn down pages, corners of pages, I'll write in them. You know, I love marginalia. Just that's kind of rocks my world. Yeah, I mean, books I think are meant to be like that. They're, you know, they're not pristine objects. The only thing pristine about them, what's inside of them, not what covers them.
Is there a job or a profession you'd have been interested in doing if you hadn't been this sort of superstar author? You mentioned in our previous chat that you had legal training. So was that your sort of first love, or was there something else that you would have loved to have seen yourself doing?
I had another friend of mine who was an author, but he was an FBI agent as well. And he was an English major and he wrote political speeches on Capitol Hill. And he and a friend on a whim said, let's try to become FBI agents, and passed. And he told me that story. And I was too old at that point. I think the cutoff is like 35. But I thought to myself, you know, that would have been kind of cool to try out for like a federal agency, either FBI or probably the FBI. I wouldn't want to do Secret Service or CIA, but law enforcement, where you actually get to investigate cases and figure puzzles out. Because when you're writing a book, you're just figuring a puzzle out, you know.
Do you remember the first book, David, you bought with your own money?
Yeah. So when I was a little boy, a lot of people read The Hardy Boys. I never read The Hardy Boys. There was another series out there called Alfred Hitchcock and the Three Investigators. And Jupiter Jones, Bob Andrews, and Pete Crenshaw, they were all boys in California, the same age as me, and they had this junior investigative detective, you know, place. And their office was in this old dented, beat-up trailer. the Jupiter Jones lived in a junkyard, and they had all these, you know, adventures and mysteries, and he'd won the use of this, you know, English chauffeur in this, you know, Rolls Royce, and it was like fantasy. But I bought my first one with my paper route money. I was a paper boy, you know, back then when parents allowed you to ride off by yourself when you were 11 in the middle of the night on a bicycle. So, and I read them all. And obviously, you know, they get torn up and all that when you're young and you don't take care of your books. And so when I became an adult, I went back on and found a website that sells first editions, all of those. And I bought them all again. And I go back occasionally, sort of nostalgically, and read them sometimes because they meant a lot to me. I grew up in Richmond, Virginia. When I was born, segregation was legal in Virginia. So my world was a very black and white world, and I could have grown up with those values. And what saved me was the library and books. You know, prejudice is all built on, you know, making you afraid of the other. And a lot of people who haven't traveled anywhere, you know, they've never met the other, so they are afraid, right? So you can meet the other in books. And prejudice, you know, Mark Twain always said that travel is fatal to prejudice, because if you travel to places and you see people where they live, you realize one thing about them: they're just like you and me. So books saved me from the racist world in which I was born.
So you talk there about travel. Is there a place you've visited that's inspired you to write?
I have to tell you that when right after the last presidential election in 2024, we left the country and we spent 2 months in Australia and New Zealand. And what I loved about Sydney, I'm a big boat guy. We have a house on Big Lake in Virginia, and I taught my kids how to water ski and sail and wakeboard and all that stuff and how to drive the boats. So Sydney has this fantastic ferry system. I was on a ferry every day the month I was in Sydney with my laptop, going all across the harbor, just writing. And that's where I started writing All In, the book that's set down there. And something about water and boats is so inspiring to me. It's therapeutic and also inspiring. It's like, at some point, I think they had just kicked me off the ferry.
I was going to say, because the ferries don't last that long.
Yeah, so yeah. Your time is up, sir. Get off.
You've been there and back several times.
Finally, David, you're throwing a fantasy dinner party, and you can invite three authors, living or dead. Who's coming?
They're all going to have passed away. So Mark Twain would definitely be on there, because I've always wanted to meet Mark Twain. James Baldwin, who I think is my country's most elegant writer, and Patricia Highsmith, because I just want to see what made her tick. You know, I want to see, where did Strangers in the Train come from? Where did The Talented Mr. Ripley come from? And all the other books that she's written. What a unique talent.
And would they get on, do you think?
I think Twain and Baldwin would get on very well. I mean, Twain, he took stances, you know, in his writings in the late 1800s that no other writer would take. I don't know about Highsmith. She might have just pissed everybody off. You know, I don't know, but I would have liked to experience it.
So another author has chosen Highsmith, and that comes up pretty regularly. The idea that she might not be the best company. There's so much insight she can bring, but maybe not the best company.
Hope Rises by David Baldacci is published by Macmillan and is out now. And remember, you can email us at any time, booksoftheyear@yahoo.com, or get in touch via our socials at Books of the Year. Hope you can join us next week when our guest will be bestselling thriller writer Lisa Jewell.